Still later, in fact only a few short days ago, Sean Conway gathered three of his former Wolves teammates together for an in-depth chat about their life and times as high school hockey players. He's joined by Tom Burkett, Richard Schulist, and Brian Hearn.
Well, I'm delighted to be with three old friends and old hockey pals from the days of the Madawaska Valley High School Wolves hockey team. And with me today are Tom Burkett, a great defenseman with whom I played in 1968, 69, and 69-70. Richard Schulist, another outstanding defenseman with whom I played in 68, 69, 69-70. Great defenseman with a punishing, hard, as they say, hard shot. Left many wounds on my goaltender's body. And Brian Hearn, another defenseman, and sometimes secondee to the power play. Brian played, I'll let him tell you what years. Brian and I did not play together, but he certainly played on the year 1970-71, where the Madawaska Valley Wolves won not just the Upper Ottawa Valley Junior C League Championship, but they went to the Eastern Ontario Ottawa and District Hockey Regional Finals, and as they say, they won the whole deal. So, gentlemen, really good to see you. I think, Tom, I may have misspoken. In your case, you played that first year, 1967-68, and then in 68-69, correct?
That's correct.
Those were the two. So, want to really just have some reminiscences. We had a very nice alumni event in Barry's Bay in early February of 2024 to just think back to that original high school team created in 1967 by the newly created Madawaska Valley District High School. And that high school owned the team and operated the team for 4 years, from 1967 to 1971. And then they surrendered the ownership and management of the team to the Lions Club. And the team has been reborn here in 2023-24 by some local business people. And hence the old and the new met on the weekend of February 10th, 2024. And I was surprised at just how many happy memories there were from 55, 54, 53 years ago about that original team. So starting with you, Tom Burkett, 54, 55 years after you first laced up those skates to play with the Wolves, what's the most vivid memory you have more than a half a century later of what that experience conjures up in your mind now?
The most vivid memory? Well, I don't know. I was just happy to be on the team, and I was proud to wear that uniform. You know, and every game, I couldn't wait, especially for Sunday night, for the home games. That's where I wanted to play, in the old Gray Lady, as they call it. But I couldn't wait till Sunday nights.
And Tom, I know because I was a goaltender, you were an outstanding defenseman. Did you mostly, throughout your earlier career as a midget, a bantam, a peewee, was defense your primary occupation?
No, but Mr. Drago, I guess he saw defense in me. But I like playing defense, because when you're playing defense, you see everything in front of you. When you're forward, what's happening behind you, you don't know. A defenseman, if you're a defenseman, you can see everything ahead of you, you know, and hopefully nobody's behind you.
By the way, just for the listener, and we'll be getting to him very shortly, the first and very colorful and sometimes controversial first coach of the Madawaska Valley District High School Wolves Junior B hockey team, later Junior C team, was Joe Drago. More about him later. But Tom mentioned Joe Drago, and he was that initial coach. So, Tom, the way you spoke there, you almost say that you liked being a defenseman because it was sort of like being a quarterback in football. You had to see the whole game.
That's more like watching television. I wasn't really a quarterback, but I could see the whole game.
Right. You know. All right, another outstanding defenseman. I'm looking right at him, and Richard played for 3 years, a little bit of a fourth year, as I recall. What looking back now over a half a century ago, Richard, what's your most vivid memory of putting that Wolves jersey on and going to the Barry's Bay Arena on Sunday night and off to the out-of-town games? We'll talk about that a bit later when you think about it now.
I just love to play the game. First time I ever practiced in my life. Never practiced ever in my life. And 2-hour practices, and I'm telling you, I can feel it in my legs now. My knees were numb. I could just had a lot of fun. Like, it was a great bunch of guys to play with, and just loved playing.
And you, of course, living in Wilnow, which was a very great producer of marvelous athletes, hockey players in particular. I think there was one year in that first 3 or 4 years where there were 5 or 6 shoeless on that team. But there were 2 or 3 or 4 when I was playing. You guys didn't have the benefit of a fancy covered arena that we had up here in Barry's Bay. I remember going down to play hockey in Wilnow, and I think at one point we were playing on the frozen ice of that creek that goes through the village.
That's right.
And the outdoor arena in Wilnow actually built right over that creek?
Yes, it was. And actually, I own the place now.
Oh, yeah. So you were an original pond hockey player. That's you and Gordie Howe. You learned how to play the game out in the great outdoors.
Well, the creek runs right through the village. And what they would do is just block it up and lift the water up. The boards are already built, and we were playing hockey.
So to go back to your first answer to my question, what is the most vivid memory? It was just simply the love of the game for you.
Yeah, and a chance to hit people.
Oh, really? So there was a little bit of male aggression that was building up in your teenage self?
Like, I never considered myself a skilled player, but I love to hit.
I beg to differ, but we can differ on that. Yeah. But
I did have a hard shot, but it wasn't very accurate.
I won't comment. I don't think that's fair either. But did you ever see yourself as an enforcer?
No, I never fought. I don't know, maybe people were just scared of asking me to.
All right, our third guest today, Brian Hearn, was a very, very talented defenseman, sometime member of the power play. Brian, what's your most vivid or lasting memory of the years that you played on that Wolves hockey team?
Well, number one was we started playing hockey on the pond. Larry Shala, my neighbor, my cousin, that's where we started playing like pond hockey, just like pond hockey, just like Richard did. And like Richard said, and I'm the same, I just love playing hockey, and I like the guys I played with. And it did, and the coach was great. Bill Hull was a great coach. I never played for John Drago, but I heard he was a good coach too. He was tough. But Bill Hull was kind of tough, but he was a little more lenient. But Chinky there, Larry Shala, I'll call him Chinky, but he was a great hockey player. And we learned on the pond, we used to call ourselves West End on the pond. And we played the East End in town. We used to have a rivalry there. And we played a lot of midget, a lot of juvenile. I didn't play, then I went into Chinky got me into playing in junior. I didn't play junior. He said, I'm not playing. He said, yeah, you're playing. We need players. So I said, I'll never make the team. I'll go try out. We're short. And I went, and the rest is history. I made the team.
And what years again did you play?
70-71.
Just the 1 year?
Just the 1 year.
And that's the year the Wolves won everything.
Yeah, we won everything that year. But, I mean, we had a great team. Didn't matter who you passed the puck to. Anybody could score. Didn't matter which line. We only had 3 defensemen. I don't know if you knew about that. Well, we really had 4, but really 3. I played about 25, 30 minutes a game.
Why did you only have 3?
That's all we had. Everybody played forward. Nobody wanted to play defense.
Well, let me go back to Richard and Tom. Did you guys were full-time defensemen, as I recall. Did you ever play on a team with only 3 defensemen? Well, yes, you did.
I actually played on that team, but they found out I was too old by a couple of months. And so I was, and even my brother Mal played on that team. And he never remembered me playing. And I said, oh, yes, I was. But, and whatever games we played, we won. And So I'd say that's why there was only three defensemen, because once I was told I was too old.
So Tom mentioned something that I want to go to next, and that is growing up.
Can I say something about three defensemen?
Yes.
One game we were playing in Eganville. Was Eganville in that league?
Yes. Well, they originally had a team from Eganville, Cobden. They were called Opiongo. Madawaska Valley High School opened in 1967. Opiongo came next. They came in 68, and they followed the Madawaska example of having a high school operated team in the non-high school league, then a junior C league. But my memory is that in that first year, 1967-68, they were called Eganville, Cobden, Mixburg, Beechburg. And I'll think of the proper name for
Muskrat.
Them. No, it wasn't Muskrat, but it was something like that. But they were in that league. They became the Opiongo Warriors once Opiongo High School opened its doors in 1968.
Well, what I was going to say about that one game in Eganville, it ended up only three defensemen at the end of the game because Joe Dragle must have been in a bad mood or something. He started benching people. And first period, went fine. Everybody had their shifts. Then they started getting benched. Second period, I got off the ice twice. Third period, I played the whole third period because everybody else was sitting at the end of the bench and you only had a few players going. And I think we won that game.
Tom, would you consider that a learning experience, playing 20 minutes of nonstop defense hockey? You must have been dog tired.
Well, yeah, but we were young, but, we used to go down, play on the lake. We used to play for 3-4 hours steady anyway. So, we're used to that. But, once you're playing in an organized league, if you get tired, on the pond, it doesn't matter if you make a mistake. Out there, if you make a mistake, everybody notices it. But, it was a fun time.
Well, you've all sort of hinted at that. One of the things about the organization of the Madawaska Wolves, that they were owned by a corporate body, basically the high school board. And that board, if you remember, had money. I remember being a member of those teams in 68 and 69, and money was not an object. We had very good equipment. We were bussed around. The whole experience introduced most of us to the rigor of exercise, training, good coaching, and all that went with that. So let me turn to that part of it. So you guys were all very active and very good players in those early years with the Wolves. Let's talk about coaches, and let's start with Joe Drago, who I hadn't seen in 55 years until a few weeks ago when he appeared at the luncheon at the Balmoral Hotel, where we all met as part of the alumni weekend that I was talking about earlier, February 10th and 11th of 2024. Joe is now 84, and he gave quite an interesting talk to the group gathered at the luncheon or dinner, whatever you want to call it. But my memory, and I didn't play that first year, was that Joe Drago was serious business, to put it politely, as a coach. So for those of you who played for Joe Drago, and that would be you, Tom Burkett, and you, Richard Shulis, to help the audience understand just what kind of a coach Joe Drago was.
Well, I still remember some of those drills that he had. They were tough. They were different because everybody seemed to be skating around here in the wintertime when we were kids, and everybody went the one way around the ice, stopped on the same side, and he made us, stop on each side and go around the other way and stuff like that, and some of those things. I remember one time he was in the arena, is making us just jump an ice from left to right and back to front and left to right. But it taught you, it gave you a sense of balance, I guess, and, be able to move in every direction. So, that's where the coaching comes in, because he would give you these drills that would develop the certain skills in a person. you know. And so, you know, he was strict, but you have to be strict if you want to run a hockey team.
Richard Schulist?
He definitely was strict. Tom, you must remember some of the practices. We never touched the puck for 2 hours. We skated for 2 hours, never touched the puck. I guess he figured we knew what to do with the puck, but the skating is to keep up, like with the Renfrew Lions Junior B team. You have to be able to skate with those teams. And I think it built up a lot of the cardio in us to get, you know, to chase these guys down.
How hard was it? Because he could be tough. I was not on that first-year team in 1967, but I was at all the home games, and I tell you, he was... there was a bit, more than a little bit of Eddie Shore in the Joe Drago that I remember. He could be a very tough taskmaster.
Yes, he was. If you did something wrong on the ice, when you were coming off the ice, you never looked his way. You just went to the end of the bench.
So we get a good sense of Mr. Drago. I was really impressed by how quiet and smooth and diplomatic he was at the event on February 10th. I was quite impressed. He has really become somewhat more mellow. So, Brian, you did not play for, probably didn't know Joe Drago, did you?
Well, I knew him from school.
You did know?
I didn't play for him, but I knew him.
But so your coaches were both Horace Decker and...
Not Horace Decker, it was Bill Houle.
It was Bill Houle. So Bill Houle, of course, was the head of the guidance department at Madawaska High School, and he'd been around hockey in a lot of places in Ontario. We all remember him very well. What should the listening audience know about Bill Houle as coach and as a coach that took that team in its third or fourth year to the greatest height it ever achieved in terms of local and regional success?
Well, Bill Houle was not like Joe Drago at all. He was kind of mellow. He was a big man. I was afraid of him, really. He was so big. He was always so small. But he was very fair, and he says, give it your 100%. He said, if you give 100%, you'll have no problem with me. And I thought that was very right. And he was a great coach. He was a likable coach, and all the guys liked him. And the poor man, I think he died pretty young lately after, but I mean, his son played too.
Right, his son Bill.
But he played after me, I think.
But Brian, you, Brian Hearn, you told me not too long ago that you got quite the little teaching session from Coach Bill Houle about the difference between a good and a bad mistake. Do you want to just recall that lecture?
Yeah, he had three different penalties. He used to take a good penalty and a bad penalty, but not the dumb penalty. And
what do you think he meant by the dumb penalty, although I think we can all imagine.
Well, like, especially in your own end of the ice, don't take a dumb penalty in your own end of the ice. That's a no-no. Take it in the other end, but never in your in their end. Sorry, did I say their end? Never take a penalty in their end. Take it in your end when you're protecting the net, but not in their end. And he says, when you get a guy on the ice, don't punch him on the ice. Even be, it's over. The play is over. Why take a penalty? That's what he meant by the dumb penalty.
But let me just let me get to that question, because back 50, 60 years ago in these parts and in hockey generally, fighting, sad to say, was often a very prized and positively viewed part of the game. How did you avoid that? Does you recall, were there school rules that said that this is a high school team, you can't be a goon squad fighting like some outfit that came out of Slapshot, the movie?
Well, I don't know. I was never a fighter. I was so small. I was afraid to get beat up. I was that small on the ice, but I was never a fighter. I was like Richard. I was never a fighter. But, I mean, the guys were all so big, I was really afraid of them, really, like Shawville, especially a team like Shawville. But they were so big, I used to go underneath them. So I was a little quicker, maybe. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, I mean... No, I like getting back to fighting. Our team never really fought. The whole team never really fought. Frank Jakubowski wanted to fight sometimes, but then he'd take like a dumb penalty maybe. I don't know. But I mean, our team was never a fighting team. We're just a good skating team, good hockey team.
Richard, I can't imagine that you got through three-plus seasons and didn't get yourself into at least one altercation.
No.
Wow.
No. I'll tell you, one altercation was my brother Dave. We were playing in Shawville, and the captain of the Shawville Pontiacs, he had been already in two fights. So third fight, you're out for the season, right? And that was the rule at that time. Now, we were playing, I believe, for Horst Decker. We were playing. And Dave was, he was kind of a spare player at the time. And Horst told him, he said, you go, take him out. Get him to fight with you because he'd be out for the season, right? My brother was never a fighter in his life. I don't think he'd break an egg. So what happened was the face-off started, and before the puck was even dropped, my brother was tapping him, and I, you come on, come on, come on. And the guy's just looking at him and laughing, right? So my brother gets 5 minutes for doing nothing, for just, you know, tapping him. The other guy doesn't get anything. It was a power play. So that's where my brother got the nickname Schultzy, after Dave Schultz.
Oh,
from the Philadelphia Flyers.
I did not know that. Oh, yes. I know your brother well, played with him, and yeah. that certainly was his yeah. nickname. Yeah. Tom, you wanted to say something earlier when Brian was talking.
Well, but the fighting.
Yes.
Well, I never got in a fight either in those 2 years.
That's my memory. But, you were pretty diplomatic.
But Joel Dragle used to teach us how you pair us off. Okay. Pull the sweater over your opponent's head. He said, because, if he ever get in a fight, if you get the sweater over his head, you know, he doesn't know where to go, you know, punch him. But he used to teach us how to do that. But he said, if you do get in a confrontation with somebody, never drop your stick until they drop theirs first. He said, you know, keep it for protection. He said, never drop your stick until they do. And then get the sweater over his head.
Was that ever an exam question when you were at school? I'm only kidding when I say that.
Did we have exams?
Yes. So a couple of you have mentioned places like Shawville, and so I want to take you to. There were five or six other teams in the league when I was there, which was mostly when you guys were there. So here's my question: when you think about some of those other places, I just remember a very competitive league, and some of the competition was spiced by the fact that we seemed to feel more loved or less disliked in some of the out-of-town venues than other places. So let me ask you, Tom Burkett, where out-of-town did you most like playing? And was there any particular place on the circuit where you'd rather not have been?
Well, I'd sooner play in Renfrew. And I didn't like playing in Deep River.
Why didn't you like playing in Deep River?
I don't know.
They had a very large ice surface.
It was a large ice surface and everything. But there's two instances in Deep River that I can recall. One was, it was getting near the end of the game. And there's only a few minutes left. We were winning. And face-off was in our end, and I iced the puck. That's fine. We had another face-off. I iced the puck again. And Green was referee at the time.
Yes, yes.
You know, they were getting ready for a face-off. He skates over to me. He says, you iced that puck once more. He says, you're getting delay of game penalty. I said, you can't do that. He says, watch me. So I did ice the puck. And the other incident there, it might have been the same game. We got a penalty, and they were setting up to get the penalty, pull their goalie. They passed the puck back and went into the net. Green was the referee again, and Horace Decker was the linesman. You know, and
Wait. Horace Decker, wasn't he the coach?
This was the first year.
Oh, the first year.
He was a referee, linesman, all that. Yeah. And they passed the puck and went into their net. I don't understand why Mr. Drago didn't put up a bigger fight, but I was arguing with the referee. I said, that's a good goal. I said, that should go up on our scoreboard. He said, no. And it was actually in the following summer, I was talking to Horace Decker. I said, you remember that game in Deep River where they
They pulled
their goaltender and they scored in their own net. And Decker said, you know, that was a good goal, he said, but I was overruled and I couldn't do anything about it. I don't know. I have no idea how he missed that, you know. But he must have been thinking something else at the time.
Yeah, I remember that game.
You remember that game?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because we were getting a penalty.
Yeah.
We were getting a penalty. So the goaltender leaves the net, and they put that extra attacker on, six against, right? But their player passed it back. He thought the defenseman was back there, and there wasn't anybody there. The puck went in the net. It should have been a goal for us.
Well, they may have had some bizarre rule that if it was a delayed penalty, that overrode. Because I would agree with you. I don't know the rules as well as I once did.
Well, the rule was we were with the enemy.
So you didn't like Deep River, did you say earlier?
No, I didn't like Deep River.
Tom has given his reasons. What was it about Deep River that you didn't like? Because their arena was a different build than some of the other
teams. I just didn't like the way the ice surface was. It was wide and short, and the fans were always on the one end, giving us a hard time.
Particularly the goaltenders.
Yes, yes. But Renfrew, I loved playing in Renfrew, even when we got the police escort out of there.
And what caused the police escort?
I believe it was the game I was knocked out.
Yeah.
And you got injured, right, Tom?
Yes, leg. I was undressed, and we were sitting in the stands at that time.
Yeah.
Well, I thought we were talking about pacifism here just a few minutes ago. What
but,
happened?
But we enjoyed it. It was at the O'Brien Arena, right?
Oh, yeah, right there on Argos.
Yeah. Just loved playing there.
Wait.
And Petawawa. I love playing in Petawawa.
Yeah. But I want to just pick up on this. So you're avoiding the main story here. Who was involved in the big fight in Renfrew that time?
Really, I don't know about the fight because I was knocked out in the whole third period.
But there was, I don't know if there was a lot of local fans up there, but there was stuff going on in the crowd.
Yes.
And the cops were called in.
Yeah.
That's when I was sitting beside you, and there was two cops behind it, and then they had to go to the other side. And he said, this is worse than Vietnam.
And Tom, now this is taking on a little more color than, I can remember. Do you think that was the first year?
Yes.
Or it was the first year.
Oh, all right, so I wouldn't have been there. But I used to remember those George Cup finals, the old senior league, when Barry's Bay and Eganville would meet for the final games in Renfrew. And you're describing contests that take me back to those wild and woolly times. But, Brian, you mentioned Shawville. You thought those big farm boys from Pontiac County were a little bit too much to handle? They were rough and ready?
Well, they were a big team. The whole team was big, but they weren't very good. The whole team wasn't very good. We could handle them. I don't think we ever lost a game to Shawville. But they were a big, rough, scrappy team, but... we could handle them quite easily, but they were rough, and you better keep your head up in the corners, backing up, especially with them advancement. They were a rough team, but we could handle them, but I'll never forget playing them one time. I think it was against Deep River or Petawawa. I know it was in the playoffs, and I got hit in the ankle that one time. So I'm going to lose the home and home game, a home and away game. So we had two games on the weekend in the playoffs. And I said, I guess I'm going to miss the next game. He said, no, you're not. I said, what do you mean? I'm Michael. I can't walk. He said, Dr. Smith was the coach. Not the coach, but the doctor, team doctor. He said, we'll fix that. We'll just freeze your ankle. I said, easy for you to say. Oh, we'll do it. We need you. We'll only have two defensemen then. We only got three now. So we'll just freeze your ankle. I said, yes, you've got to do what you've got to do. So I played that game, and I scored two goals the second game. I never forget that. I played in Petawawa. We won that game. But I remember I lost 3 weeks of school after that because I was on crutches. I was running around the table. My sister was chasing me around the table and laughing at me, but I couldn't walk for 3 weeks.
Did it?
After that, the freezing come out.
Did it leave you with any lasting disability?
But I still love we won that hockey game. Who cared? I wouldn't care, but we still won the game. We won the championship that same game, I think it was.
So you didn't like Shawville, but you liked Petawawa and you liked...
I didn't like Deep River Ice, like they're saying, but myself. But it took me 3 games to get onto it. It was so wide.
Yeah.
It was like a European rink because it was so wide, And backing up, you had to learn how to play defense there. It took a while, like I say, three games. But I got onto it after, and you got to skate them off in the corner. You got to make more room for yours. You got to push them on the side. They don't get them around you. You got to go back up a little more. That's all. You got to back up a little more. But I didn't mind otherwise, but I liked the best rink was Petawawa.
Yeah.
I loved the Silver Dart.
Silver Dart, yeah.
So it was a great, great rink. I liked it. Yeah.
Well, the first year, 67, 68, Pembroke also had a team.
That's right.
And actually, that was kind of a nice arena to play in.
Because the Memorial Center.
Yeah, the Memorial Center, yes. That was it was a larger ice surface and everything. Yeah, it was a well-kept ice surface and everything. I like playing there. Well, but I don't know if we won very many games there. I don't think
but
so.
But Tom and Richard and maybe you as well, Brian, if you played midget all-star hockey, you would have been at the Art Bogart Easter weekend midget tournament in Pembroke, which was at the Memorial Center.
Right.
I remember that's the first time I got to play there, and it was kind of, you felt like you were closer to Maple Leaf Gardens than you were to smaller arena. I just have to say that the Deep River Arena and I had not the best relationship. I don't want to dwell on this, but I don't know whether any of you were there. Somebody, one of you must have been, because, and if you were a goaltender, as I say, that big crowd was right behind you.
Yeah.
And Don Green, the referee, who I got to know very well in later life. Don had a son, Larry, who was a very good hockey player. He played for the Petawawa Generals, and he went up to the next tier. He went into junior hockey. I really liked Don as a referee, but Don was refereeing this night, and I won't get into all the details, but I managed to get myself thrown out of the game for disagreeing with one of his calls, and I thought, well, I may as well be hanged for a sheep as a lamb, and I was going to get my full value for expulsion, and I'll say no more than that, but a few years later when I was knocking on doors at Deep River, I had a few people say to me, did you play on a hockey team from Barry's Bay? And I said, no, that couldn't have been me. It must have been one of my relatives. Let me ask you this question. Thinking about team and community relations, what do you remember about the kind of support you got here in the Madawaska Valley, not just at the school? But my memory was the team was a very big deal at the high school. But it was a big deal in all the constituent parts of the Madawaska Valley. My memory of going to those Sunday night home games is because we had three players from Madawaska, the two Cameron boys and Jim Dunn. You'd see half of Madawaska in one part of the stands. This half the Shulis and Wilno were associated with the team. So all of Wilno would be there. And we had the Micahs and a couple of other players from the Pammer. And so there was very strong support for the team from the various parts of the Madawaska Valley. Killaloe, Wilno, Palmer Rapids, Cumbermere, Barry's Bay, Madawaska. Because happily, each of those constituent communities contributed significant talent and players to the team. But what's your memory of going to play hockey on a Sunday night home game at the local Old Gray Lady, as we called it, the old arena on Main Street in Barry's Bay, starting with you, Tom Burkett?
Well, like I said, I mean, that's what I live for. But even...
What do you mean by that? That's what I lived for.
The best subject in high school was hockey. And, you know, that was, you know, I wanted to play hockey and, you know, That was.
Did you feel like you were a big man on campus, and meaning the school, and a big man in town because you were such a good hockey player, as were your two friends here, Richard and Brian?
No.
That was no part of the kick that I.
I remember when we painted the arena blue and gold. Those the inside the pillars and stuff. They were painted blue and gold.
Don't remember
that's
that.
That's right, I remember
Brian,
that.
You remember,
I remember that,
right?
Yeah, I remember that.
But the team came in there, but there was also people from the community, because I remember my mother going there. I remember other people's parents going there, helping paint the
rafters.
Up as far as you could reach. Blue and gold, right?
The colors
of the walls, yes. I mean, the community was involved in that.
And if you were on the ice at a home game on a Sunday night, especially getting into playoffs, what do you remember about that crowd? They must have been pretty supportive, as I recall.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, I like when he skated out on the ice, and, of course, we had the cheerleaders. And, yay, Tommy, yay, Burkett, yay, yay, Tommy Burkett. Well, everybody knows who I am now. Save it.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that, Richard?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And on even on the bus rides, the cheerleaders would be on the buses traveling to different towns.
Yeah, no, yeah, I remember that as well. Were the cheerleaders around when you were there, Brian?
No, I don't remember when I played, but I remember when you guys played, they were there.
Yeah.
I don't know where they disappeared. They didn't like us or what. But, I mean, they had them. I know when you guys played, they had them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, we didn't have them. I don't remember them, though. No.
Oh, yeah. They were a big part of it. Yeah. And they would have pep rallies at the school, as I recall, when we were leaving on a Friday afternoon to go to Renfrew or Petawa or wherever.
I remember one game Sunday night. It was first period. And one of the local fans, I'm not going to mention the name. It was at the north end of the rink on the west side. And one of the opposing, I forget who we were playing, one of the opposing players came by and he's a fan. He slapped him or punched him or whatever. And so Joe Drago stopped the game. He says, remove that person from the arena or the game is over. And he left. He left on his own.
And this was in the Barry's Bay Arena.
This is Barry's Bay Arena.
Oh, that's interesting.
But Joe Drago, how tough he was, he wasn't going to put up with anything like that.
Any other memories about just...
Well, the Barry's Bay Rink here, the old rink, was a cold place to play. But, I mean, I loved it. The fans were great. And as soon as you jumped on the ice, your blood was just pumping. You couldn't wait to get just before a warm up, you know. He said, no, let's start the game. He said, you're just pumped to go, eh? And no, Barry's Bay fans were great. Well, not, I shouldn't say the community supported us. And I mean, I love playing at home here. It was a cold rink, but I love playing here. But I'll never forget the memories. It is one thing that'll always come back to me.
Well, my memory was that even in the early part, the season would normally begin a little about the middle of October once we got the artificial ice. Okay. And it would terminate usually in April or March, depending how far into the playoffs you got. But even when the season, regular season, opened, I don't ever remember a night at the home game when we didn't have at least half or more of the arena full. And typically, it seemed to me more than that. And after Christmas, my memory was it was more often than not nearly a full crowd. And if as we got into the playoffs, the place was jammed.
It was always full.
I
don't know how many people it held, but the rink?
I think that rink would probably, I'm guessing...
2,000?
There was four levels on which you could stand. Nobody really sat. So I'm guessing, I don't know what the rating was, but I'm guessing with a good crowd in there, you were getting close to 1,500 people, because you could put a couple of hundred people up in the...
Yes.
Oh, I'm told that it might have been 1,800. Well, that's possible because there were four levels to it. Mm-hmm. And when it got busy, it really, because I think the Paul J. Yakubowski Arena, I think the rated capacity there is about 1,100.
800.
800, all right. Yeah. So I think you could put, because they've got more. Anyway, it was what I most liked about it is that you knew when you were home you were going to have a really strong turnout. And as we've noted, as the goaltender, you could look up and you could say, I'm not kidding, half of Madawaska. I used to work at the mill up at Madawaska in the summertime. I got to know a lot of people in Madawaska. And I saw a lot of those faces in the stands because there were three really fine hockey players on the team, Doug and Alan Cameron and Jim Dunn. And likewise from the other parts of the region. You were going to say something, Richard?
Even the support, like when we were playing out of town, was great.
That's correct.
Because my sister was telling me that they actually had buses going to some of these games, and I never remember that. You know, like I always looked at it. I was just playing hockey. That's it. You know, like no big deal. I'm just playing hockey. I'm not on a pond. I'm not playing on an outdoor rink. I'm playing indoors, you know, top of you know, I'm on top of the world.
Did it stimulate in any of you the thought that if I can play for the Madawaska Wolves and I can get this kind of coaching and discipline, you know, maybe an ambition to join the National Hockey League is not completely beyond the pale, beyond reason?
It was hard to make the National Hockey League. Only six teams that time. Well, and, but we were asked to go to 67 camp, me and Larry Shala.
You were?
Yeah. But other things, we just didn't end up going. We should have went. Not saying we would have made it anywhere because it was hard to get on. But we were asked to go. The scouts were there, mm-hmm. and they said, Larry Shala, and we just didn't go. I don't know why, I guess.
Richard?
I think there was few players went. Like we were, I don't know, Tom, if it would be the first year team or the second. Players were asked to go and try out for this team in Guelph. I didn't go, but there was a few players, but they said it was a rough hockey.
Well, Bruce Howard go to Peterborough? Or he was tried out
I
for
think,
Peterborough?
Yeah, Bruce, yeah. I think, did. Yeah, Bruce had a call up, I know. And I think, didn't Frank Akabuski have a call to some place?
He could have.
Was it Hamilton?
I can't remember, but I know a number of the guys were certainly getting. And at that time, too, some of the colleges and universities were recruiting, too, from leagues like the Upper Ottawa Valley. Yeah.
I didn't know he was that young. He was 14 years of age.
14
and
years
he was
of age.
He was a good hockey player.
Yeah, and he was, I think he said 140 pounds.
Yeah.
Like he was.
Yeah. Yeah, he really had, like, his skating, everything.
So you're taking,
coming from the Hamilton area.
So you're taking the conversation to where I next wanted to take it, and that is to ask each one of you, and then as a group, to reflect on some of your teammates over the years, some of the colorful, talented, difficult characters. I don't expect you to say difficult, but just reflecting on the teams and the colleagues with whom you engaged, because it was, you know, when it got going, it was 10, 12, 15 hours a week you spent, because there were two games, there was a two-hour practice, wasn't there, on one day, and there was an hour practice the other day. So thinking about your teammates, and you can, I want you to name some names and tell me about what was made them so interesting, so skillful, so talented, so tough, so resilient. Let me start with you, Richard.
Well, I'd have to name Tom first.
That's a good choice.
I enjoyed watching him play.
What did you most like about him?
Well, the thing is, if the puck was going in the corner and he had to go and get it, he was the one that was always coming out with it. You could tell he was strong in the upper body and the legs, you know. And Bruce Howard, just for a young player, I just couldn't believe. I thought maybe he would have been 16 years of age or so, but 14. And Ronnie Murray, you know, Dennis Callahan, the Micah boys, and the Camerons, just...
Let's just stop. Let me stop with it. When I played those 2 years, Ron Murray, who was a good friend and actually a cousin of mine, was clearly a superior talent and just quite a character. What was it about Ronnie Murray that made him such an interesting character to play hockey with, Tom?
Well, he had a terrific slap shot. Half the time he didn't know where it was going, but it was a good shot. And didn't Drago or Jackie Billings, he used to call him Goldilocks because he had that longer hair. Long hair was coming in that time in the 60s and stuff. But yeah, he was quite the character. Yeah, and he always had something to say, and jokingly and stuff, you know.
And Ronnie didn't like to lose. Not that any of you liked to lose, but Ronnie was, in my experience, a very competitive guy, very talented guy, but he wanted to win.
And he would get under the other player's skin.
How so?
Wow. Like, just the way, just his style.
Yeah.
Like, he was a very intelligent player. Yeah. I remember one time he was facing off in our end, right? And he told me, he said, "You stand right behind me." He said, "I'm going to win that. I'm going to win the faceoff." He said, "And the puck is going to be coming right to you." He said, "As soon as that puck touches your stick, you shoot it right back up, just the way it come back to you." He said, and guess what? He was on a breakaway. You know, because he won the faceoff, it comes straight back to me, and I just slapped it right back where it come from, and he was gone, and he was waiting, and he was gone. Smart player.
He was a great hockey player. Yeah. Ronnie Murray was a great hockey player.
One of the things, and I used to work at the mill with Ronnie in the summertime, and he was a physically fit guy. He was pretty, you know, strong, mm-hmm. but he wasn't a natural fighter. He was he should not have, and he didn't do it very often, mm-hmm. but because he'd just get too mad, he couldn't fight because he'd just be so annoyed. But he was one talented player.
Another colorful player was Leo.
Danny Hutter. Oh, God, who just died, sadly. You know,
God rest his soul. And we used to call him Slapshot.
Yeah.
And he was like a flimsy stick. I remember one time he was wanting to get a stick for a game. He broke two hockey sticks before he got out in the ice, just testing them out. But he was, along with Brian, he was from the West End
the
gang.
West End.
Yeah. Same with Larry Chinkichalli. Oh, and he was just a phenomenal player. Short and stuff, but you couldn't knock it. You couldn't knock that man off his feet.
No. And what I remember, Brian, about your cousin Larry Shala, Chinky as we called him, and he did. He had the lowest center of gravity of any human being I've ever known, and he was a quiet but competitive and determined guy. But like Leo, Danny Hutter, the two of them were. Every good team needs players like that. They went out and they gave their 100%. They didn't make a big noise. They produced good results. And but there was clearly more to it with Larry and with Dan. Danny, I'm a goaltender, so I don't fully appreciate the skill set of forwards.
Well, them two guys I knew the best because we come from the same area.
Yeah,
went to school together.
How would you assess the skill set? What was it about? You've heard Tom on Danny Hutter, and I wouldn't disagree with that at all. But from your perspective, you saw more of them for a longer period of time. What was the essence of their real skill in hockey? Larry Shala, your cousin, and Dan.
Okay, Danny was Larry. You couldn't knock him, like they say, knock him off the puck. You couldn't even knock him down. Very skilled hockey player. Danny was a little different. He was a good hockey player too, but in a different sense. He was a taller guy, a bigger guy. Slimmer, but he was a good hockey player. Never played with Danny competitively, but I know I watched him play. I played with Larry all the time. But both guys, there were night and day difference in hockey, but they're both good. They just played different, but they're both good hockey players. Yeah. I never forget them. Never forget Danny. I miss him. He's my neighbor. Yeah. He's gone. Never forget him.
Brian, you were on the team that won it all.
We did, yeah.
So tell me some of the players that were on that team, and what was it about them? Because clearly, I mean, when Tom and Richard and I were playing in the 67, 68, 69, 70 period, we got close, but we could not get by, in our case, Deep River. In other cases, it was Petawawa. But you guys not only won, but to quote the late, great Cassius Clay, you whooped them. You whooped them real good.
Petawawa was hard to beat. So was Deep River. But I found Petawawa the team to beat. But, I mean, I think we beat them 4-2, both series.
And who were some of the players that were on that?
The list goes on and on. Callahan, Dennis Callahan, and two Micah boys. And, I forgot Mel, your brother Mel.
Mel Shulis.
Mel Shulis, great hockey player. He's my defenseman partner, Bruce Howard. Good hockey players. I'll never forget great hockey players. And Mel, you could always depend on him. Bruce, a little bit. Mel, you could depend on him.
Bruce Howard, a little bit. What?
Well,
he wanted to be
a good hockey player.
He wanted to be more offensive than a good
More offensive. We were behind. We were defending the goalie
minding
more.
Minding the store.
We were minding, yeah, we're like Tom used to do. Tom was a good defenseman. He'd mind the store. He wasn't really a rusher, but he knew what he was doing with the puck, Tom there. We were like that too. I was never a rusher.
So three names you brought into
Callahan,
this.
Callahan, yes.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Dennis Callahan, who I remember.
Very shifty. Very,
yeah, what was it about Callahan that made him such a resilient and good player? And the Micah boys from Cumbermere, Arthur and Arnold, I mean, besides they always seemed to be in perpetual good humor, no matter what was going on.
Very fast.
Fast.
Small and fast. And Dennis Callahan was tall and shifty. He could go at that puck, he could stick handle, and he was so sneaky. And he could score a lot of goals. He scored a lot of big goals for us. And then Paul, getting back to Paul Jakubowski. Paul, good hockey player. Well, Jimmy Dunn. Alan Cameron, don't forget about him. Oh, he was a great hockey player, Alan Cameron. Oh, boy, so was his brother.
Smooth guy.
Dougie is good. Yeah. Never played with Dougie, but I watched him play. He's very good hockey players, excellent hockey players. And the list goes on. Mickey Bond played a little bit. He's passed away, too,
yeah,
I hear.
He's passed.
He played a little bit with us, and not the whole year, I don't think. And then, who am I missing? I'm missing quite a few guys.
Well, you've got a good number of people out there.
I've got a number of them.
I want to just take a name that hasn't been mentioned, because I've asked you all to reflect on...
Oh, about the goalies, too. I forgot about that.
Well, the goal...
Main part of the game.
Yes, the goaltenders. Well, I tell you, that young Shulist cousin of yours, Jerome, was he played on your team?
Yes.
He was a very talented... But I want to get to... I ask people to reflect on, you know... players for their skill, their toughness, their character, and I want to go to a name that I think will be known to most of you for his skill, but also his color, Basil Goat Billings.
Yes.
Now, Tom Burkett and Ron and Richard, you didn't play with Basil?
No, I didn't. I played a lot of ball with him mostly.
Well, Basil Goat Billings was a good friend of mine, a good neighbor of mine. Sad to say, he's no longer with us. But I tell you, I just chuckle every time I think he was there early. He stayed late. He was the most stylish player before he got dressed, and when he finished dressing, he was the top man. There was a bit of Stan Mikita in him. He'd get into a corner and he'd like to start a fight, and he was usually smart enough to get the hell out of the corner before it really got going. But when you think of Basil Billings, who played for two or three of those years, what do you think of when you think of Basil Billings?
Well, I know Coach used to always talk to him about, you know, when you're going in and somebody turns or they... trying to get away, don't make a big circle and go around. And it is a stop and stay on him. But Basil, he was a great skater.
He was.
His boy, and he'd always have to make a big circle and come back, you know. And, you know, all these other players, all he needed is a second and they're gone. But Basil had to go for that extra spin, you know.
I remember that, yeah. Yeah, that big loop, and he'd be looking at, you know, what had happened behind him.
You think there was a little bit of a figure skater in him?
Well, Mr. Drager used to call him, Brad Scott,
she was a figure skater.
Yeah, he used to call him Brad Scott because, you know,
okay.
You're not here to figure skate, you're here to play hockey.
Yes, well, any of the other... Anybody who was, more than anything else, just a real character when you think back to those three or four years?
Well, Callahan definitely was a character.
In what way?
In the dressing room. Like, you know, you need players that kind of loosen things up. So, he would have been one of them.
Yeah, that's my memory of him.
And
he had a very good, Callahan had a really good, no matter how tough things were going, Callahan always had a sunny side to him, you know.
You know, and then, of course, we had players that were just irregular players and quiet, like Bill Hu played quiet.
Yeah.
Conrad Sobolski. Just steady
solid
players. Yeah. They're just, there's a number of them, you know, don't mention them, but they're just there. You need these players too because they fill these spots and, you know, but they weren't colorful like Richard said or like Dennis Callahan. And when I heard that he became a doctor, what kind of doctors do they have nowadays?
Why would you say that?
Just the way he wasn't always joking around, you know?
Yeah.
He wasn't the type to be a doctor, you wouldn't think. But he was.
I mean,
a good doctor here.
Yeah.
But,
All right, I'm going to wrap this up soon, but one of the things that I want to get you thinking about and talking about is that this was a whole undertaking launched by a new district school board. And while they were getting involved in an extracurricular activity that had not previously been associated, I don't think, that's maybe not quite accurate, but certainly the high school was primarily in the business of educating in a kind of a traditional way. There were sports, but they were sort of internal sports like basketball and things that fell into the curriculum of the education department at the time. Joining initially a non-high school junior B hockey league was not something that was done in a lot of high schools. So one of the questions I have for you is that this was, I think, in retrospect, a very successful undertaking that the school board took, that they were new. I know the chairman, Murray Daly, was a good friend of mine. His son, Paul Daly, I think we all knew. Paul was a very good, talented hockey player. He'd gone away to school. Had he been around for the opening of Madawaska High School, I'm sure he would have been on the Wolves hockey team. But what the concept that the school board had, as I remember from my conversations with Murray Daly, the chairman, was that they were trying to build, that being a new school, bringing various parts of the Madawaska Valley together for the first time in one secondary school, they wanted to find something that would be, that would bind people together. And I think they made a very, very good choice for some of the reasons we've already discussed. But there was an educational component, you know, I think, just listening to you folks talking here today. And what do you think you learned? What, if anything, was the educational legacy of being part of a high school-sponsored junior hockey team in a place where there had never been that kind of opportunity before? And I'll start with you, Tom.
Well,
surely one of the things was the coaching.
Of course, I played midget hockey and stuff with a lot of the guys from the other communities, but it brought all these communities together, you know, and there was always rivalry, Barry's Bay, Wilno, Killaloe, Whitney, you know. Well, Whitney is not part of the high school district, but it brought them all together, and you got to know these people, and why were we rival with them, you know, because they're the same as us, you know, and when we got together, you know, it was great, you know.
Richard?
That's exactly, you know, like, you know, coming from Wilno, like, what exposure do you have? You know, there was no high school. I never left Wilno until I was in grade 11, and I was at St. Joe's here. And so the high school was opened up in 67. That was the first time. And, like, you know, and that's how, you just, all of a sudden, you just kind of bonded with people, you know. It wasn't because I liked school, but because of the hockey team. You know, our sports. Because it's sports I was always, like, you know, even talking about Danny Hutter Leo, right? Wrestling.
Yes.
You know? He beat me in wrestling. I said, wow. God, this guy is strong. You know, so like you were saying, so it's wrong. And he was strong.
Yes,
and
he was.
We were the same weight and everything. He was, you know, that just those little things, you know, like. But meeting a lot of the people from different towns, all of a sudden, like, it opens up everything. Kids don't understand it now, how easy they have it, you know, because they're everything's open to them. But there wasn't very much open to us before, if it wouldn't have been for hockey. Because even like hockey, I remember how I got involved, you know, just skating on the creek and stuff like this. And Leonard Red Sullivan worked for Department of Highways. He's good friends of Joe Pekarski, and there was Homer Conway. They would stop at my parents' general store every day. And just the one day, Leonard asked my dad, he said, you wouldn't have a few young lads that would be interested in playing hockey? He said, yeah, I have. He said, well, you tell them to be ready. Saturday morning, there's going to be a vehicle picking them up. Just stand out at the highway. That's how it happened, you know. And then that's how we started to get to know kids that we were enemies with before. We were all of a sudden playing with these guys, you know, like Tom and Brian and just everybody, you know, all of a sudden. And that's the way the high school was. Like, all of a sudden it opened everything. To me, that's the way it was, you know. It wasn't that I liked the school part of it, because I just wasn't interested in that. But the hockey part of it, I definitely was.
You're almost poetic as you say some of that. Brian, what?
Yeah, I agree with what Richard said there. I didn't like school either too much. But then you got to go, once this hockey thing opened up here, we got out more. We got out, then we had our own team, and I said, oh boy, this is great. And then you get to know more people in high school. You talk to more people right at school. And then you get to even know the teachers more. You never talk to the teachers. Now you start talking to teachers. We had the game last night. Oh, we wouldn't miss the game. So you got to know all these teachers, right? And I never really knew them. I see them around in school, but they never taught me because I did different classes, right? Yeah. And not only that, but the students, you go into the cafeteria and now they all talk hockey. That's all they were talking about is hockey. And he says, we don't miss a game. I says, I know, because I guess you don't, because I see the fan, the building's full. So anyways, and then you got, and high school wasn't built, it was in grade 10, actually. I didn't go in grade 9 because I was going in St. Hedwig's here down here. St. 10 had opened, grade 10. And it opened everything up. Like you say, it opened up everything, the whole community got opened up. And then even the students, I never talked to that guy before, they come and talk to you. It opens everything up, you got to know everybody. Everybody was more open, and everybody talked more. The community was together more.
Listen, it was great. Think I could have written a better script than this last response to the question. And one thing I would add, I think we're all of roughly the same age. It's hard for people, I think, today to imagine that like a place like Barry's Bay or Wilno or Madawaska or Whitney or Covermere, in the 1950s, I was born in 1951, you were born in 1949, you were born in
52.
So to be growing up here in the mid to late 1950s, between, say, 56 and 65, there was no television, except Pembroke Television came in 63. So there was no television, there were no computers, but there was winter, long winter. Hockey was, I just remember as a kid, well before the Wolves came along, we'd have a rink in the backyard. We'd make a rink of the street outside. We played hockey. We couldn't wait for the hockey to start in the fall. And when the rink got going, we were over there, you know, playing minor hockey. And then because of the kind of thing you just discussed, there was a local team, and then there was a, you know, an all-star team, or there was a rep team and a whatever they call them. So you would be, if you were on that second tier, you'd be going off to play people in Eganville and, you know, Renfrew or whatever. So it was as, well, I won't try to even repeat what you said. I think it was so true. My grandfather, who was a very good baseball player, and he lived to be a very old man, and he got himself elected to the provincial legislature in 1929, and I'm convinced that a big part of how that all came about was playing baseball. He was a good baseball player, and he played a long time. And so you're living in Barry's Bay, but you'd be going to Beechburg, and you'd be going to Chalk River, and talk about a way is a way to build a network, just a network of friends, because everybody was interested in baseball in the summer, hockey in the winter, often both sides of the same coin, and it built sort of connections around a community that previously could be very tight and very local. Well, gentlemen, this has been beyond my best expectations. I can't thank you enough for really telling people, I think, what they need to hear about the special opportunity that that high school and the Junior B, Junior C hockey team had launched 55, 56 years ago, meant not just to the community, but to the four of us who were lucky enough to participate. Brian?
Yeah, don't forget, we also beat the Pembroke Lumber Kings.
And we did beat the Pembroke Lumber Kings. Yes, we did. Well, anybody want to say a last word?
Didn't beat the Flying Fathers.
Don't remind me. Don't remind me. I can still hear Field Father Les Costello's puck going right by my ear into the net.
But we did get a free trip up to Cobalt, his parish.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say hockey. One thing that I found out, a lot of us got involved with minor hockey after we had families and stuff like that. And I noticed the one thing, if you treat your players fairly and they enjoy playing hockey, because I think it teaches you respect also. Because there's some of the kids that I coached, I remember one kid who used to get in a whole lot of trouble, and they said, you know, you're not going to be able to do anything with him. This was after the hockey. And there was somewhere, and he was going to do something, you know, not very nice. You know, and he said, he's not going to listen to you. I walked up to him, and he said, oh, Mr. Burkett, how are you? How are you doing? And, you know, and he was fine. He didn't do anything. And another thing is, one of the guys that I coached in minor hockey, when I ended my career, he was my boss. And he always talked to me as Mr. Burkett. And not Tom. And he's my boss. Yep, Mr. Burkett. I mean, you know, if I think sports teaches you a lot of respect and discipline.
And teamwork.
Definitely.
And yes. Discipline. Mm-hmm. And winning is not always a guarantee, and losing can often be a real educational experience as long as it doesn't become too commonplace.
Yeah.
Tom, I want to ask you a question. You just reminded me of this. I remember when I was in my political life and I would be down, and I remember distinctly being in Beechburg one day and somebody came up to me and they knew I was from Barry's Bay and they said, "Did you ever know Ambrose Micah?" And I said, "I sure did, Father Ambrose J. Micah." And this person said, "You know, I played baseball," and he said, "That guy was an amazingly talented baseball player." And he was a pitcher, wasn't he? I think, was your uncle a pitcher?
I believe so. Well, I know his brother was. I know Eddie was his brother. But I know what your grandfather, he used to talk about them, and so did Delmer. He always talked about both those Micah boys.
Well, there was two of them in Beechburg. They said that guy was, and he played for the Beechburg team because he was a parish priest down there in La Paz, I think. And so my question was going to be, because you were really one of the fine hockey players ever to come out of here in my lifetime. Was he any kind of a mentor? What if any role did he play in just mentoring you? I mean, his primary sport was baseball. I don't know how much hockey he played, but he was an outstanding athlete.
Well, him and, of course, with baseball, him and MJ Murray, they bought all those Little League uniforms for baseball.
Yeah.
But they also bought a set of hockey pads, hockey equipment for young lads also time. So, yeah, he was, yeah.
But weren't they also involved in a Little League baseball quite a bit?
That's where he bought all those. Yeah.
And actually, there was four teams. I remember I played
Braves, Tigers.
Tigers and Dodgers and
Yankees.
Yankees,
yeah.
And the West End, we all played all the different teams. I can't figure that out.
I didn't realize, just living downtown, as I do now again, in Barry's Bay, Richard and Thomas, that the West End crowd was such a definite, determined subgroup.
We used to go over there and play them on the pond. Play hockey on the pond. Play the West End gang. Corrigan's and Burkett's and Ambrose Clark. And
Connor Cebulski. That's right. We owned that pond, though. That was our pond. But, I mean, it wasn't very big, but that's where we learned how to play, and it was right down below the hill.
You know, and we shouldn't be too defensive about that because, you know, if you've ever been to Floral, Saskatchewan, it makes Wilno look like Manhattan.
Okay, yeah.
It produced Gordie Howe.
Oh, yeah, look at that. Yeah,
you Gordie know, Howe. The great talent doesn't always come from big places. Yeah. And on that note, I just want to thank you all again, and also thank you, Tom Burkett, Richard Schulist, and Brian Booney Hearn, the one of the three of us that took the Madawaska Valley Wolves to the top of the heap, winning both the Upper Ottawa Valley Junior C League Championship and the Eastern Ontario District Championship by some pretty embarrassing lopsided victories, Brian Hearn.
Yeah, the ones in Almont, we double-digit them every game. And I couldn't believe it was like a football score. I couldn't believe it.
All right.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
That was Sean Conway in conversation with Tom Burkett, Richard Schulist, and Brian Hearn, all members of that early MVDHS Wolves hockey team that was formed in 1967, the year our local high school was first opened. I'm Kristen Marchand, and for the producer of the Opyongo Line, Barry Conway, we'd like to sincerely thank the MVDHS Wolves hockey organization for making themselves available for this show. Indeed, they are a living reminder of our local heritage and unique culture. Good day, and God bless.